thing and other forms of regulation in daycare. People entering the daycare field are often surprised to learn that every state exercises some control over daycare through licensing and other forms of regulation. The person who simply wants to provide care for neighborhood children without a lot of red tape may regard this control as an unnecessary burden. Complying with state and local regulations exacts a considerable toll in time, energy, and sometimes money. And in some states, the process seems far more complex and time-consuming than necessary. Despite the problems, regulation of child care is a good and necessary precaution, which works in the interest of children, parents, caregivers, and the community. Regulation is basically an act of public intervention to protect people against identifiable risks. In principle, regulation is justified when the risks are real, when the protection is effective, and when the regulations safeguard without imposing unnecessary hardships on those who are regulated. While all states now regulate daycare to some degree, few present practices are wholly satisfactory. There are many gaps in the coverage, such as the lack of regulation for certain types or sizes of institutions, for facilities operated for only a few hours a day, or for facilities at recreational or shopping centers. In some cases, the building safety regulations were written for other institutions and later extended to daycare, thus often forcing daycare facilities to meet unnecessary rigid requirements. Wide differences among the various requirements, statutes, and recommendations in different states are an added source of confusion. There are generally three kinds of standards which can be applied to daycare. One set of standards says that the licensing requirements require the basic floor of all protection for all children in daycare, a level of quality a daycare program should meet in order to be permitted to operate. Standards required, secondly, for public funding represent another higher level of quality which a public agency sets as a condition for subsidy. Thirdly, standards for voluntary accreditation represent a third level of quality, a set of model standards which are the ceiling of quality to be continually raised over time. Each of the different forms of regulation discussed will fit loosely into one of these categories. As for licensing is a form of regulation in most states by which the state or a local agency sets and enforces certain minimum standards which daycare programs must fulfill before being allowed to operate. Daycare licensing has two major goals: to prevent foreseeable dangers and eliminate or reduce hazards, and to encourage and support a nurturing environment. There are many other things that come into consideration with the setting up of a daycare. Among the many is zoning. Many municipalities set zoning regulations which restrict the uses to which land may be put. Since large-scale daycare, a relatively recent development, does not comfortably fit into most zoning codes, daycare facilities may be zoned out of neighborhoods where they are needed or may be forced to meet unrealistic standards. In some municipalities, family daycare is treated for land use purposes as a residential home, and center daycare is considered similar in land use to a small school. However, in most communities, zoning has proved one of the most serious factors inhibiting the growth of daycare. As to incorporation, every state has laws governing corporations. Many states require daycare organizations to incorporate before they can be licensed, and most advise any group planning a daycare operation to incorporate for their own good. Incorporation ensures that someone is responsible and accountable for the acts of the organization, and at the same time protects individual members by limiting their personal liability. What about federal funds? There are federal requirements tied to federal funds. All daycare facilities which receive federal funds are required to be licensed or to be approved as meeting the licensing standards of state and local agencies. In addition, a set of federal daycare requirements has been developed for all agencies receiving federal funds. These requirements state, among other conditions, that the facility must also meet state and local regulatory requirements. Did you know that there is accreditation for daycare programs? Accreditation means that a daycare program has received some sort of seal of approval from an organization known both for setting high standards and for helping programs to meet them. A daycare operator may voluntarily seek the accreditation of a national agency such as the Child Welfare League of America or of an accreditation system developed at the local, state, or national level. The operator is committed to meeting the high standards of the accredited organization and in return receives public recognition for operating a model program. Then comes the problem of staff credentialing. This method is more an attractive possibility than a current form of regulation. Although the staff is the most important element in quality daycare, there are presently few requirements for education or experience to be met by caregivers, other than those each program sets for its own staff. Obviously, any standardized credentialing system based on academic performance alone would be senseless. Such a system would exclude many, if not most, present caregivers who are competent but without formal academic degrees. A method which is both effective and realistic is needed to regulate staff quality. The Child Development Associate Program, which is discussed elsewhere, is one possible approach. I just mentioned the Child Development Associate Program. The Child Development Associate is a new middle-level professional credential awarded to caregivers who demonstrate competence in areas similar to those listed above. The credential will be granted by a broad-based consortium of national organizations under the sponsorship of the Office of Child Development. In addition to credentialing, the consortium will promote various training programs for caregivers and work to provide child caregivers with a clearly defined and valued public status. We mentioned the word caregivers. Primary caregivers are those responsible for immediate face-to-face care of the children. They are the principal staffing concern, since the effectiveness of the program depends on the quality of their interaction with the children. There are several basic requirements for caregivers in a quality program. Each caregiver should be at least 18 years old and able to read and write. Each caregiver should be healthy enough to perform all duties safely and should have no disease that could be communicated to the children. Each caregiver must be willing and able to carry out the activities required by the curriculum. Each caregiver must be able to work with children without using physical or psychological punishment, be able to praise and encourage children, be able to provide them with learning and social experiences appropriate to their ages, be able to recognize physical hazards and either eliminate them or take precautions against them, and be willing and able to increase his or her skills and competence through experience, training, and supervision. In a program with about 30 or more children, it is advisable for at least one caregiver who is present half the time or more to meet any one of the following qualifications: to have a college degree with coursework in child development or early childhood education, child psychology, child health education, or other directly related fields, or have a high school diploma or its equivalent, plus substantial experience in an educational or daycare program, or be certified as a child development associate, which I have talked about previously, or have similar status because of obvious competence. In a program where some of the families do not speak English, there should be at least one caregiver who can communicate with parents and children in their native language. Although competence and knowledge are very important, caregiving requires considerably more. It requires patience with children, pleasure in caring for them, and a desire and commitment to work as a caregiver. Children need caregivers who like them and believe they are important. They sense these feelings or the lack of them, whatever the caregiver's outward style. The best intentions and training cannot take the place of a real desire to care for children. On the other hand, the lack of training should not keep anyone with the desire and the capability from becoming a caregiver. Ideally, these people could work directly in a daycare program as apprentice caregivers and be provided with supervision and consultation. If they receive adequate in-service training and supervision, caregivers need not be required to have formal classroom training first. Most caregivers are women. Since few children have an opportunity to be with their fathers and other men during the day, and even fewer ever get to see their fathers at work, the presence of men in daycare should be encouraged. More men may be attracted to child care careers as these jobs receive more public status and become part of a more definite career ladder. I'd like to continue by talking about administrative structure in a daycare center. First of all, let's be concerned about the board of directors. What is the board of directors? Actually, they are a means as a unit to establish a legal responsibility for actions of an organization and to ensure that the policies adopted reflect certain interests and points of view. It's good to have a board of directors, regardless if it's the church board of directors or the daycare center's own board of directors. Should be made up of at least 4 to 6 to 10 people, all depending on the size, of course, of the daycare center, I suppose. If the group is incorporated, that is, the daycare center, it'll have to be advised of the legal requirements for the board by an attorney. Most daycare center boards run in office from year to year, staggering the office terms so that not all of them would get through at the same time. This is very helpful. Some serve 1 year, some serve 2 years, or however. Board members usually represent several groups of interest: parents, the community, the church, and different professional interests in the community. There also may be a parent advisory committee as well. And their function is to advise on the hiring of staff members and suggest changes in the operation of the program. They can help with obtaining funds and getting community support. Each organization decides for itself the division of duties for program director, the board of directors, and others. Now, the following are the basic roles and functions of the members of the board of directors. The board sets down goals and guidelines for the program and evaluates performance. That's the performance of the staff. The board is a link between the daycare program and the community. The board hires a competent program director and delegates administrative authority to him or her and evaluates the director's performance. The director's role, then, is another thing. The director's role is seen as being threefold. First of all, the director is to assume certain administrative responsibilities for the organization, either by assisting board members or by being delegated full authority to act as a liaison between the board, staff, and parents, so that each group understands goals and needs of others. The daycare director is the key influence on the quality of the program. The type of care the children will receive will largely depend on the director's background and personality. The director translates policy into actual care results, not so much from resolutions and directives as from hiring the right man or woman to head the program, to teach under the director, that is. There are points to be considered when hiring that director. The following are the points to be considered in hiring a director. Are there any staff members who should be considered for the job? A career ladder for staff personnel is a fiction unless there is real opportunity to move up it. Then next, whatever the candidate's other qualifications is, he or she sympathetic to the kind of program desired by the board. In addition to personal skills, can the candidate supervise, train, and help others perform their jobs well? Does the candidate understand the needs of the neighborhood children, and can he or she plan a program to meet these needs? Will children and staff be able to respect and identify with this person as a director? Does the candidate have the ability to work cooperatively with board members, other staff members, children, parents, and the community, and to reconcile rather than compromise their diverse viewpoints? The board of directors must determine the importance of these and other considerations. Although no candidate will measure up completely, it is the board's job to find and hire the best available person to meet the particular needs of the children and their families. It's the job of the board of directors to support the person they choose for director. The director's job is impossible without support of the board. Now, the basic administrative duties that are required in any daycare operation include setting policy, planning the program, managing finances, handling information, mobilizing resources, and supervising operations, as well as recruiting, hiring, and training staff, promoting parent involvement, handling community relations and publicity, and, of course, evaluating the program on a regular basis. What is policy setting? Well, a policy is a written statement of what is going to be carried out. The written policy statements help with the administration of the daycare. The policy statements should be distributed among the parents and community to help them better understand the philosophy and the program. And, of course, all the members of the staff should have a copy, as well as the director and the members of the board's board of directors. What are some of the things that are covered in such a policy? Some of the subjects that should be covered by written policies are these: the type of daycare service to be offered, the hours of operation and the conditions under which a child will be accepted earlier or kept later than the other children, the number of daily meals and snacks to be served, personnel policies. Every staff member should be given a clearly detailed copy of the personnel policy, including job descriptions, pay ranges, and benefits, before being hired, and should accept employment only with the understanding that he or she accepts the conditions of the policy. If the administration is dealing with a union, the advice of someone experienced in labor relations should be sought to advise on the terms of the policy. Then there are admissions policies. The grounds on which children will be accepted or not accepted into the program should be specified and made available to all applicants. This is the end of the lecture for Tuesday, April the 29th, 1975. All the heretofore mentioned material will be included in the midterm exam on Thursday.